This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.
We really have just cleared up the peripheries of Najaf. We are not going to attack the mosque. We are not going to attack Muqtada Sadr in the mosque. Definitely we are not going to do this.
Iraqi Interim Prime Minister Alawi speaking to the BBC from Baghdad on Friday. Mr. Alawi said the olive branch of peace, as he called it, was being offered to the rebel cleric Muqtada al-Sadr if he chose to accept it. Today, militia members are reportedly set to turn over the keys to the Imam Ali shrine to Shiite religious authorities. Dan Jor is on vacation, so we're joined by our friend, Los Angeles Times editorial and opinion editor Michael Kinsley. Thanks very much for being back with us, Michael.
Thanks for inviting me, Scott.
What do you make of this decision to turn the keys to the kingdom of the shrine, if you please, over to Shia authorities and not Iraqi police, the Iraqi government, or U.S. soldiers?
Well, he doesn't want to acknowledge the authority of Iraqi soldiers, Alawi, let alone the United States.
Sadr
yeah,
doesn't.
Yes. Yeah. You've had a lot of experts on Iraq here, but who I don't want to compete with. The lesson for America is obviously that George Bush had a point in the 2000 election where he said nation building is a complicated thing and we should be hesitant to do it. You know, you have to have a certain willingness to be a nation and not have separate sources of power. They haven't reached that point.
Let me ask you to reflect on the events of just a little under a week ago. Last Sunday, the Iraqi National Conference convened to select an interim national assembly, 1,100 delegates. And they got restive on a few points. What do you extrapolation
do you draw? 1,100 delegates is not a feasible way to have a parliament. You know, representative democracy requires a bit more extreme effort at representation, and they're not prepared to do that. So I think they have problems ahead.
They certainly seem to challenge Alawi on the matter of Najaf, and I wonder if his actions this week, do you think, in any way reflected the pressure he felt from those delegates?
I don't know. Are you allowed to say that on national
yes,
public
Yes, and it's
radio?
Such a pleasure to have someone Dan Shore really does know everything, so we never hear it from him, but it's a pleasure to hear someone substituting for Dan say, I don't know.
You pick the only thing I don't know, of course. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on to other areas of expertise. There were arrests in Britain this week, 8 suspected al-Qaeda operatives arrested and charged with conspiracy to commit murder. Now, one among them is allegedly responsible for the surveillance of financial institutions in New York, New Jersey, and Washington, D.C. that led to the Orange Alert in those areas. What more may we know about that surveillance or the activities of the
suspect? Well, the two ominous things about it are, one, that there was this guy who's mentioned in the 9/11 report, actually, as having been looking around at financial sites other than the World Trade Center. And the other thing is that there were these reports out of Pakistan 2 weeks ago, 2-3 weeks ago, that led to the terror alert, which you remember, in these financial centers. And there are 5 of them, and the same 5 centers were the subject of various surveillance data that these people in Britain had. And they were the IMF and the World Bank in Washington and the New York Stock Exchange and the Citicorp Center in New York and the Prudential Center in Newark. And so that can't be a coincidence.
I do want to get to politics here at home. Senator Kerry has filed a complaint with the Federal Elections Committee about this group calling itself Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. Senator Kerry maintains that this group is actually allied with the Bush campaign. What does filing an FEC charge mean? Does the FEC have any power to do anything?
Well, the FEC can declare that they are allied, and then in that case, the spending of these groups would count against the total that a candidate is allowed to spend. That would be Bush. And, of course, Kerry is under the same pressure over MoveOn.org and the ads they're running against Bush, and those could count against Kerry. The FEC is probably going to be very hesitant to get into that, mm-hmm. and I think quite rightly, because the truth is, what is connected? You know, the conservative, these are people in the Texas conservative establishment running these ads against Kerry, mm-hmm. and there are people in the liberal establishment running these ads pro-Kerry. And are they connected? Well, yes and no. You know?
Well, this brings up the matter. These are both, I guess, what are called 527 mm-hmm. Groups. And to what degree has this whole raft of campaign finance laws, which were, of course, ostensibly intended to clean up the process, how quickly have they been apparently circumvented?
Well, appallingly quickly. You know, the campaign finance reform goes in waves. We had the Watergate mm-hmm. laws, and then people found ways around them, and you do it again and again. But the waves are coming faster and faster. I mean, these laws are barely a year or two old, and already they found ways to circumvent them. And I am coming to sympathize with the people who said, this is hopeless. Have disclosure. And that's the best. That's the best way to deal with it.
We want to take advantage of your special expertise in the unfolding world of the World Wide Web to ask you about Google. Stock in Google began trading this week, gained 18% in its first day. Company's market value at the end of the day was larger than Ford and General Motors. Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
The question you're asking is this another bubble?
Like you really do know everything.
Like the one before. There are some differences. Mm-hmm. The main difference is that Google is 6 years old and is making money. It's a real company. Now, the price clearly reflects a lot more future optimism than the price of General Motors, which is basically valued as a going enterprise. But it's not like the days when you and I would sit around, have an idea for a company and incorporate and then go public the next day, take our millions and leave everybody holding the bag. That's not Google.
Mm-hmm. We use Google every day,
yeah.
Both of us. I suspect a great many of our listeners. What is it doing? I mean, because General Motors builds a car. You can see that. Ford builds cars. You can see that.
Well, it's providing a service that people value. And now it's providing it for free, which is people used to say, what is your revenue strategy? Mm-hmm. You know, and they would say, well, we'll worry about that later. But they do have a revenue strategy. They sell ads, in essence. And they're a going business.
Let me ask you, Elmer Bernstein, a composer of music for films, died Wednesday at his home in California. He was 82, and I know this is a career that you've noticed and cared about.
Well, he wrote film scores, and he was a part of the golden age of film scores in the middle of the 20th century. It was really the end of the great classical romantic music period of the 19th century. It was the last classical music that was really popular. You know, people never heard of Elmer Bernstein. They think of Leonard Bernstein, but this is his score from The Magnificent Seven, later a Viceroy commercial, which people have heard. And it is the end of an era.
Okay. Michael, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks very much for being
with
us.
Thank you, Scott.
Michael Kinsley is editorial and opinion editor of the Los Angeles Times.